listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, it's 10:03. It's the final hour here of The Bench. Lance Zierlein and Del Olale. And thanks to Trey for producing as well, sitting in. John Granato out today and tomorrow, and he'll be back on Monday. You have the Astros jumping off Friday, Saturday, Sunday against the Angels on the road. The three pitchers for the Astros, Zach Greinke, Luis Garcia, and Lance McCullers. So always fun to watch Lance McCullers pitch these days. So he'll be on the Sunday game that starts at 3 o'clock. You got the Texans taking on the Green Bay Packers in preseason. In years past, I actually paid attention much less in preseason over the first couple games because I didn't care what the starters did the first series when they got in and all that. These questions are, to me, almost irrelevant now. I actually want to see these preseason games. I want to see some of these players. I want to see the offensive line. I want to see what Ross Blacklock does, the rookie who really didn't do anything last year. I want to see if Charles Minnehue is ready to take that next step, which I do get the feeling he could be a factor this year. I want to see what Lovie Smith's defense looks like in the 4-3 and see how they are, what Shaq Lawson brings to the table. There's actually a lot of stuff I want to see from the preseason. Do I think this is going to be a good team? No, I do not. But do I want to see who they're going to be playing with and what some of those battles look like and if some of these guys can play? Absolutely. I think there's, I'm more interested in this year's preseason games, Dell, than I have been in preseason games previously.
And I'm interested in Tim Kelly because whether it's Tyrod Taylor this year, Davis Mills this year, or a potential young quarterback next year, the offense looked better under him with Deshaun. I like to see him. Was that just a product of Deshaun? I like to see if he can get, not the same production, but be as creative and get maybe as much as he can out of the lesser talents. Because if he can, that speaks to, as long as if you give Tim Kelly talent, he's going to be able to produce some numbers. So I think he has I think there's something on his plate, and he's got to prove something too. He had the benefit of playing with one of the better quarterbacks in football. He's coordinating with an offense with one of the best quarterbacks in football. He has an opportunity to show that. Sure, a more talented quarterback helps, but I can get things done with lesser guys. So I do want to see what he does as well.
I'm really also interested to see, and I don't think we're going to be able to see it from watching a game, but what I think is going to be interesting is to see the Pep Hamilton-Tim Kelly combination. Tim Kelly's a play caller. Pep Hamilton's the quarterback coach. How those two work together for Tyrod Taylor and for Davis Mills, I'm presuming those are the two that we're going to see this year primarily, how they work together and what they do with those two quarterbacks is going to be very important. Because if your goal is to win games, which I do believe the Texans' goal is to win games, my goal is for them to lose games, but you know, I'm unapologetic in that. I wanted the Rockets to do it well. I wanted to lose for them to lose as well. Now we have Jalen Green. Thanks, Lance. You're welcome. Me.
Had nothing to do with you.
But once again, manifesting it and then bringing it back out. It's just like the wish or the secret or whatever it is. And then the second thing is, I would like for the Texans to not be good this year. I think Texans coaches, including David Culley, would like for the Texans to be good this year. Because David Culley wants to make this more than a two-year run. I think most people think he's going to be a sacrificial lamb and another coach will come in to coach the A team. I think David Culley is a great person. Heard nothing but great things about him. Do I think he was, you know, was he ever a hot name or even a name for head coach? No. So I'm curious as to how he became the head coach for the Texans and what the thought process was behind that. But with that all said, I am interested in seeing if any of these guys are future Texans. Like, Shaq Lawson could be a future Texan. There is a chance that he could be. His deal's up after this year, I think, right?
I don't know if there's an out. I thought he signed a 3-year deal with the Dolphins.
Oh, that's right. He got a new deal. No, I think they can get out of it after 1 year. I think I remember seeing.
Okay. His initial deal was 3 years, $30 million. The out after, the dead cap, if they cut him or released him after this season, is 5.25.
And what's his base? What's his cap space?
His cap hit would be 10.7.
So you say $4 million.
Yeah. if you decide. But
well, but if he plays well, then why you also you, roll with it?
Yeah.
Or why, you might even extend him.
Sure. Maybe you make the number smaller and give him more guarantee, depending on however you want to make it work. So, yeah, Shaq Lawson could be
what
a guy.
What did you think of Shaq Lawson as a Dolphin?
He was okay. I mean, he came with more fanfare.
Why did he come over from the Dolphins? Did they have a connection to him at all? Was there a coaching connection or personnel?
I'm not sure why he decided to leave the Bills for the Dolphins. He was the bigger name for Dolphin fans because they had seen him more because he was a Bill. But Emmanuel Ogbah, who they brought over from Kansas City, was a better player. So, and Ogbah's in line for a new deal, too. We'll see if the Dolphins get that done. But he was okay. I mean, like I said, he got overshadowed by the other defensive end and also the Dolphins' ability to bring pressure with blitzes. He fits here. That's how I can be polite. He was okay. He's fine. He was a fine contributor, but nothing that made Dolphin fans go, "Aw, they traded Shaq Lawson."
No. But he is one of those guys that I think has the pedigree to be an average starter potentially.
Yeah.
If he's good against the run and just okay against the pass, because did they ever rush him from the inside? Reduce rush him at all?
I mean, maybe in a pack.
He's a strong guy. He's like 260 or something.
No, the Dolphins are multiple, so they weren't pure 4-3 or pure 3-4. Right. They like to bring pressure from their linebackers, whether it be Van Noy or Beagle or Van Ginkle, depending on who was healthy at the time, and Jerome Baker from the inside as well. They had some inside stuff with him, but he was considered more an outside linebacker. Just because that's just the way they're set up.
My guess is if they go even front, which is going to be a four-man rush, it'll be Shaq Lawson, Charles Omenihu inside, Ross Blacklock inside, and then I think Jacob Martin on the outside rushing a passer from defensive end. We'll have to see. I mean, honestly, we haven't even talked about Jordan Jenkins, but Jordan Jenkins is another guy who is – you know, there's a chance your first down defensive ends are going. There's a very good chance it's going to be Jordan Jenkins and Shaq Lawson. That's brand new. Ross Blacklock, but you know, Charles Omenihu is not really built. He doesn't really have the base to be an interior defender or even a 3-4-5 technique. So I don't know I don't know how that's going to work. I'm not sure who's going to be off the field. Unfortunately, I haven't been able to get to the practices due to hitting vacation time and then doing some other work that I've had to do. And I have to go out there and get tested every two Mondays because I'm tier two. And so if I can't hit that test, I can't go out there to the practice. Well, their test is at 8:30 in the morning. So it's been tough for me. So I wish I could see how they're aligning defensively. And that's one of the reasons that I'm excited about watching the preseason game is because I think they will show you some of the personnel groupings, how they envision a depth chart. So I'm looking forward to that. That's one of the things, though, that interests me. Charles Omenihu is a power end. Shaq Lawson's kind of a power end. Jordan Jenkins is a run-stopping end. Shaq Lawson's a very average rusher. Jordan Jenkins, despite the fact he had two good seasons, an eight-sack season, a seven-sack season, you know, talking to somebody with the Jets, they said basically it was a more effort sack guy, and he won the second half of some reps. And you know, if quarterback held on the ball, he might get a sack, but he's not a natural pass rusher. Well, Omenihu does have some natural power to him that I think he could rush well, and I think Jacob Martin, we've seen, is an edge runner. So Whitney Merciless, I'm almost writing off, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll be proven wrong, but I'm just not sure how they're going to rush those guys on third downs. Who's going to be out there? What does their rush package look like? That's actually intriguing to me because if you don't get rush, you're going to be in a lot of trouble. But if you find a way to get the best four on the field, maybe you got a shot to help your secondary this year. I just don't know who the best four are. And I don't know how Lovie is going to look at, because Lovie Smith's defense also, if I remember correctly, he was the one who was there when they used to take, when Henry Melton, they took from defensive end and moved him down to three technique. So they took him and turned him into a rusher inside. Former University of Texas running back, ended up being a defensive tackle with the Bears when Lovie Smith was there. So keep an eye on, you know, Omenihu rushing from the interior on third downs. Just something to keep an eye on Saturday's game. Rafael Stone going to join us in about 17 minutes at 10:30. So you won't want to miss that. Our chance to get a breakdown what he did in the draft and what he's seen so far in the summer league. And when we come back, it's there's some topics, some things we haven't gotten into, including J.R. Smith going back to college and boxing. Boxing has always had a problem with judges, but now they just had the WBA just had a brand new problem with one of their judges. And it's not necessarily what you think. 10:13 here on ESPN 97.5. The Bench, I want to tell you about SiteJab. Chance for you to punch up your website. My friends over from SiteJab, SiteJab.com. They take an old website and make it new. And an old, outdated site, you may think your site's fine. It's 3 years old. But guess what? If it wasn't built properly from the very beginning, and if it doesn't have the best features like e-commerce or integrated videos that give a good analysis and example of what you do from a work standpoint, then you're not getting the most out of your website. The websites are there as information portals, so where people viewing your site are able to stay on it longer. If your design is good and your information flows well with the design of the website, you can keep people on your site longer. The longer they're on the site, the more information they're able to get very quickly, the more likely you are to convert those eyeballs into business leads. And that's what it's all about for small and medium-sized businesses. And that's why a company like SiteJab, who is very reasonably priced, can help to take your business to the next level. Take a look at their website and all the suite of services that they offer you. It's more than just a website building company. They're a full service team designed and dedicated to help grow your business. SiteJab.com. That's SiteJab.com.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Starting Monday, August 16th. Change is on the way.
Look, we're going to shake things up.
New voices, new shows, more passion and coverage of the teams you care about.
Deep to left field. You've got to be kidding me. Altuve's done it again.
Throws wide open. Touchdown.
The Houston Rockets select Jalen Green.
Join us for the next chapter. ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. You're listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Hey, it's 10:17 here on The Bench. And J.R. Smith has been famous for a few different things. He's been famous for, one of them was a direct message reply to a young female fan who was just trying to
say, "Hey, JR, I love you.
Hey, I love you. You trying to get the pipe? Whoa, hey,
at least he was honest in his
said
intentions.
That, Trey.
That's rude.
That's a gypsy move.
That you can't say that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
The G word.
It's a traveler move.
Yeah, it's a true traveler move. Well, you're trying to get the pipe? Because we've got plenty of pipe here.
We're full
I've
of pipe.
Got something for you.
No, I just wanted to say I love you as a player.
I just really liked you as a player. My mom said I have to mute you now. I don't want to block you, but mom says I have to mute you at least.
You made it weird, Mr. Smith.
Sorry, Mr. Smith. I'm only like 15, so.
Oh, well, that's
thanks
not
for that
a good
sweet
look.
DM no. You sent me. Thanks for being so fan friendly. He also is known for obviously the horrific play with the Lakers where LeBron turned him into a meme. Like,
no.
What are you doing with this?
He was with the Cavs.
Oh, no, Cavs. That's right.
Against the Warriors.
Lakers, the
Game
Cavs.
One.
Now he's known as, now he has won a championship. He's also a champion, you know, he's also a champion.
He is.
J.R. Smith is now enrolled at North Carolina A&T. At North Carolina A&T, the historically black college, he's there in the a liberal arts program. So cool, he's going back to school. Okay, that's not the first time we've heard that story. Oh, but wait a minute. He's actually going there and he's right now looking to be cleared so that he can be eligible. He's petitioning NCAA to be eligible to play for the golf team. Smith's clock to compete as a collegiate athlete has not yet started because he went to the NBA right out of high school. Athletes, in most cases, get 5 years to complete 4 years of eligibility. At the Pro-Am at the Wyndham Championship in Greensboro, North Carolina, Smith told reporters Wednesday he decided to go back to school after a conversation with Basketball Hall of Famer Ray Allen. So he's going to go back. Now, according to PGAtour.com, his handicap is a 5. I don't know where that puts him in terms of HBCU golfers. I don't really know how good. I know this much. He is a professional athlete. I know that he plays a lot of golf. I know that with a 5 handicap, my guess is he's playing a lot more golf these days. I'm sure he's played some great courses before. I wouldn't rule out the fact that he becomes a decent golfer at North Carolina A&T. Now, what I was told, though, is a lot of times they'll go out and try to HBCU will go try to pluck really good golfers from you know, who might not be considering them otherwise to say, look, we got a scholarship for you. Why don't you come in, or a partial scholarship or whatever the case may be. We'll see what happens. But it's a pretty cool story that J.R. Smith is going to do that. I mean, we saw Chris Winkie go try to be a professional baseball player, and then he joined Florida State, I think, when he was 25 or 26 years old, if I remember correctly. He had a long run in the minor leagues and then said, okay, let me go try my hand at college football, and he did just that.
How does it work with the NCAA when you are a former professional in a different sport?
There, you just
they allow you to,
as long as it's a different sport, you can do that. So per NCAA rules, quote, an individual shall not be eligible for intercollegiate athletics in a sport the individual ever competed on a professional team in that sport. But the laws do not ban a former pro athlete from competing in a different sport. Multiple collegiate athletes have played professional sports before returning to school. Why would you keep J.R. Smith? I don't understand how anyone could even keep him out.
Yeah, the rules don't say that they would, but it's the NCAA, so I felt like I had to ask and see if they had any reasoning to do it if they so chose. And apparently, no. As long as J.R. Smith did he ever play in a tournament where money was involved in golf? Like, was he in a pro-am? Would that be an issue? I'm just trying to figure out a way for the NCAA to stop our fun.
Yeah, if he played for money, which would make him
make him a professional.
I don't think so. It would or would
it? I don't think it would. I'm just trying to figure out what rule they would use to stop us from having any fun with this. I can't think of one.
So. No, I don't think so. I think he's going to play. That's going to be a fun little thing to keep up with
if he's good enough.
Yeah, if he's good enough, we'll certainly see it. Now, we have not even touched on this story. And remember, Rafael Stone coming up at 8. In 8 minutes. But how about the NCAA not punishing Baylor for all the sexual assault stuff? They came out based on other violations related to impermissible benefits and improper recruiting practices involving a female hostess group. The NCAA Committee on Infractions placed Baylor on a 4-year probation and imposed other recruiting restrictions against him. But the NCAA didn't ban the Bears from playing in a postseason this upcoming season and didn't take away any scholarships. In its report, the NCAA said the committee could not conclude that Baylor or Art Briles violated NCAA rules by failing to report allegations of sexual and interpersonal violence committed on campus. The NCAA's decision is the latest example in which it has stepped away from punishing schools for issues related to sexual misconduct by athletes. The NCAA declined to take action in a case involving Michigan State and Larry Nassar. We remember him, the disgraced doctor who was accused of and convicted of sexually assaulting so many young gymnasts and other athletes in its athletic program in 2018. Baylor admitted to moral and ethical failings in its handling of sexual and interpersonal violence on campus, but argued those failings, however egregious, did not constitute violations of NCAA rules, the committee wrote in its ruling. Ultimately, and with tremendous reluctance, this panel agrees, to arrive at a different outcome would require the committee to ignore the rules association's membership has adopted, rules under which the committee is required to adjudicate. Such an outcome would be antithetical to the integrity. That's too many words. Committee, stop trying to be so smart. Antithetical to the integrity of the infractions process. Basically, they're saying, yeah. Well, the committee noted that while a former Baylor president described the school's handling of sexual violence as a colossal operational failure, current NCAA rules do not allow the Committee on Infractions to punish schools for how they handled issues. This is kind of crazy. All the stuff we know that went on with Baylor, and this is it. Like, the NCAA basically said, because of the way the rules are set up, we can't do anything about how they handled it.
It'd be like a judge saying, you're an awful person, and I wish I could punish you for this, but the rules say, I can only give you this. And this is what the NCAA has decided. The law, at least their laws, don't account for this type of stuff.
Art Briles' attorney, Scott Thompsett, said, my client Art Briles has been completely exonerated and cleared of all NCAA violations alleged against him. As the NCAA Committee on Infractions explained, the conduct at issue was pervasive and widespread throughout the Baylor campus, and it was condoned or ignored by the highest levels of Baylor leadership. The NCAA's decision today clears the way for Mr. Briles to return to coaching college football. This is basically his agent or his lawyer trying to get him another shot at coaching. I wanted to say he was coaching somewhere, actually. I thought he got a small job here recently. But where are we at now where Baylor, all this stuff went on at Baylor, and this is how it ends? Now, Baylor was punished pretty severely. Baylor had all their money withheld from him. I talked to Matt Rule one time when he was up there, and he had no money to do anything because basically the Big 12 was hanging on to his money until Baylor got the check mark from the NCAA for, you know, handling their business and taking care of what they were supposed to take care of during their probationary status. So I presume they got their money back by now. But, yeah, it was very strange to read this story and to hear people who basically understand the rules and the law say, yeah, Baylor, like the committee basically did what they were supposed to do. They basically said, yeah, all the stuff is here, but we can't take action against Baylor. And my guess is they knew that in advance. At some point they knew, you know what, when this is all said and done, this is going to look pretty bad when we know that all this stuff went on, but we really can't punish Baylor. No matter how egregious the situation was, we really can't do anything more than what we did, which was a probation that doesn't even keep them out of the postseason. I think bad football might keep them out of the postseason, but
I think that might be the definite reason they're not in the postseason.
Yeah, I think that may be it. We're going to break it now. Rafael Stone is going to join us, the Rockets general manager, who I'd say had himself a very strong first draft as he begins to rebuild the Rockets from scratch. We'll visit with Rafael Stone, our first visit with the Rockets new general manager, live from Las Vegas. He is at the Summer League that's going on right in Las Vegas, and we'll get his thoughts on what he's seen so far. Coming up next, right here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 98.7.
Wait, what?
I said 98.7. That's my show.
Let's try this one more time, okay?
My name is Stephen A. Smith, and you're listening to 97.5 FM.
Listening to The Bench on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's John Granato and Lance Zierlein.
Well, John is out, but it's Lance and Dell today, and very excited to be joined by the Rockets general manager, Rafael Stone, live from Las Vegas as we get a catch up on Jalen Green, the Summer League, the team build out. And first of all, Rafael, welcome to the show. I just want to say congratulations. Didn't get a chance to talk to you after the draft, but congratulations on what appears to be a very exciting draft for the organization.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We're definitely excited. It's always nice to have young, talented guys, and we ended up with a lot of them, maybe a little more than we expected as things played out. And so yeah, we're excited.
So let me go back to the draft and draft day for a second, because I'm curious. This was a draft that a lot of people said had, you know, at first they said the top five are as deep as and talented as any top five for years and years. And was that do you think that, I know your guy, Jalen Green, looks really, really good. I like Cade Cunningham, but you studied these guys very, very closely. Did you have that same feeling? You've been with the Rockets for a while. You've done this job, you know, the evaluation stuff, and been part of studying drafts, at least. What was your thought about this draft headed into it and its depth?
Yeah, I do think that at the very top that there were a number of guys who in kind of a normal year, there's never a normal year, but leaving that aside, in a normal year, that there were a number of guys that would typically have been drafted number one, or you'd be very happy to draft number one. And so that doesn't happen in every year, and I do think that that was the case for this particular draft.
And then what about when it came to Jalen Green, when the process of taking a look, you know, there's a lot of rumors out there that the Rockets wanted to move up to one, and there was Cade Cunningham this and Cade Cunningham that. But ultimately, you guys sat at number two and drafted a player who, boy, is unbelievably explosive. I mean, can get off the bounce and get to the hole, can has that nice step back to where he can create space for himself. I mean, just an explosive, explosive talent. What does the ceiling look like for a player like Jalen Green in your estimation?
Yeah, I mean, Jalen doesn't have a ceiling. He's, first of all, he's obviously, when you draft somebody, you don't know them. You spend as much time as you can with them pre-draft. That ends up functionally being, 36 hours or something. So the last couple of weeks have been really instructive for me in terms of who Jalen is, what he's about. It's early and he's young, but we couldn't be happier. He's really just a nice guy and very much fits with, I think, culture that we currently have and that we're trying to build on, about basketball supposed to be fun. And you're supposed to enjoy your time here. You're supposed to enjoy your teammates. But when it's time to step on the court, whether that is a practice or a game or just an individual workout, it's all about the grind. It's really, really embracing, trying to get better each and every single day. And, at least thus far, that's him to the T. So, we're really, really excited about him. And there just aren't very many people who are as athletic as Jalen, just naturally. And so the end result is, I think we're all going to figure out how good he can be. And if he keeps this attitude, and if he just stays on the grind, I certainly would not want to limit him.
You mentioned earlier being a bit surprised by the number of picks you had and the number of first rounders that were selected. Now you have, if this list is correct, there's 14 players under contract. That doesn't even include Usman Garuba, who will come over soon. Do you anticipate having all four first rounders on the opening night roster?
Oh yeah, we do.
So the other thing we had discussed going forward, at least earlier in the show, was potentially minutes distributed, because you have veteran guys on your roster who play the guard positions, and you seem to be loaded there. If you look at the three guys, we talk about Jalen quite a bit, but you had Josh Christopher, who's been impressive as well in the early summer league. Has there been any consideration about how minutes will be distributed? Is that something that's going to be discussed later on?
Yeah, that's really a discussion for the regular, not even like the preseason, really the regular season and just going. I mean, I'm sure the coaching staff is already, thinking about it and planning for it and everything else. That the minutes allocation is certainly Steven's purview, not mine. But and just to be clear, because maybe there's a little bit of a difference. Like, you have to, the only way you can't roster a first round pick is if they choose to play someplace else, like playing overseas, and you don't ever actually sign them to a contract. So they have to be on your 15-man roster. But they can bounce back and forth to the G League. If they're not giving enough minutes, they can go down and get a quick game in or something like that. So there are definitely things you can do with younger players to make sure that they're improving. But definitely all four of those guys will be on our opening day roster.
You said something that's really, I'm a big fan of team building, and you're at the, I feel like the Rockets were able to tear it down near the studs and you get a rebuild. So I'm really excited and interested to see how you go about doing this. But you mentioned culture, and you want basketball to be fun. You want it to be enjoyable, but you also want them to be about ball. When it's time to be about ball, be about ball. And I think that's exciting for everyone to hear that. What I am interested in, though, is as somebody who really thought very highly of Daryl Morey, I thought Daryl did a phenomenal job. The one area that I always had some concern about, and I think this can be the case with sometimes with analytics guys, is I didn't always feel like he had a great feel of chemistry in the locker room and how guys interacted with each other and what that could mean, the interpersonal relationships moving forward with the team. So I want to bring this up to you. in terms of team chemistry in the locker room and how guys fit with each other, how important is that to you relative to the basketball side?
You know, I use culture because I think it is slightly different than chemistry to me. Functionally, you know, all it really is who people are. And so every time somebody leaves and somebody else comes in, you're changing your culture, you're changing your chemistry. And we, all of us, I'm assuming you included, we're all really, really bad at predicting how that's going to play out.
Right.
And so, so it's not something, and that's why when people talk about chemistry, at least for me, I tend to not engage there because it's not something that I can predict. Oh, these two guys, their style of play, you know, is very complementary. So then they're going to play well together. Well, that doesn't always happen. They may not like each other. And there's so many more things that go into it. And how do you predict if some people who don't know each other are going to like each other? And just it goes on and on and on. And so, and then also it's for sure the case that in basketball, you know, if you have really, really talented players, they actually just make each other better if they want to. It's not the case that, like, there's only one ball and people can't survive and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, if you're really good at the game and you see the game faster than everybody in on a more sophisticated level, you and two or three of your teammates do too, the game just becomes easier and you can do additional stuff. And I think you've seen with some of these teams that have aggregated players who were individual superstars, they play together, and then, you know, whether in year one or year two or year three, they win championships. And you know, it turns out that sharing the ball isn't the ginormous issue that everybody thought it was. And then there have been times when it's failed, but to me, that's usually because either the people involved weren't maybe as good as everybody thought they were in the first place, or there was injuries or something else. You know, I think really talented players make each other better. So anyway, coming all the way back to chemistry, you know, I think, you know, we'll try and figure that out, but culture and how we all approach it, I think is a little different. And that's something particularly with younger players that I think that you grow and you can grow together. And so that is an area of emphasis for us.
One quick follow up. And it's tougher because guys have such small, you know, it's one thing I do stuff in the NFL, right? Well, you have 3 years. There's a lot more. I think there's a lot more variables that are under your control. But for you, with like your second pick spent a smattering of games in the G League, and now you got to try to figure them out, as you mentioned. Do you draft culture or do you try to grow culture? In other words, do you find guys who have something inside them innately, or do you try to fit? Or do you try to fit around players the types of people and players that can help them grow into a type of culture?
I guess,
is what I'm asking.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both, but I don't think it's limited just to your players. I think it's your coaches and your front office staff, and it's everyone. And it's everyone being about the same thing. You know, we spend a lot of time together, especially like last year where we were effectively all isolated together for a year. You know, and so you basically have a 30-person traveling crew, and you're stuck together. Well, you know, one really, really exceptional human being can pick everyone else up, and a couple of guys who don't want to be there and just have a sour attitude can tear everyone down. So, I think it's everyone. But I do think people grow both as basketball players and as human beings. And I include myself in that. Like, I think for all of us, our goal should be to be better people, better at our job, better at everything tomorrow than we were yesterday. And so, that's kind of the culture we're trying to build, is everybody's in it together. Everybody's always trying to improve. And we're trying to have fun along the way. I also think simple messages are the best. It's not really a complicated formula for me, but I do think that's the vision I have. That's the place I want to work in. And when I talk to people, whether it's Steven or Jalen or Josh or Alperin, or Usman or, you know, Kevin, John, Eric, Christian, you know, when I talk to people and I talk about that, I think that's something that everybody can get behind, and it just sounds fun. And I think we're all in on that.
for about maybe the last half decade, the stated goal for the Rockets has been championships. And I don't know if all costs is what I want to term it as, but the goal was in the playoffs, they're trying to win it all. That has changed, maybe not in the distant future, but certainly in the immediate future. Are there things you're pointing to for this upcoming season that you can say, okay, that makes a successful year, or is that still developing?
Yeah, no, I don't. It's actually one of the, you know, we've talked about this, not really with our players, but a little bit in the front office that, yeah, it's a little bit nice. It for sure was championship or bust the last, you know, however many years, and that was appropriate. That was the right attitude, the right goal for that team, for those collection of players and coaches and everything else. And we're in a different position where, you know, we can find success and we can find growth, even if that ultimate goal isn't achieved. And so, in that sense, I think, you know, getting back to having fun, I think it actually makes the goal of having fun more achievable and easier. And so, you know, I do think we're all committed to finding victories where we find them and setting little goals as a group to try and accomplish them and enjoying the process of getting better and growing as a group. You know, we just have a ton of very young players. And even some of the guys who are not quite as young, you know, in terms of age are very young in their NBA careers. And so there's just a ton of growth inherently possible. And if you're improving as a group, you're doing the right things. And that's for all teams. But it is a little bit of a luxury without that, you know, imminent pressure of, oh, I know you played better today than yesterday, but are you going to win a championship in 6 months? You know, that wears on you. That was tough. And there were a reason that, you know, there's a reason for the teams we've had. There was a reason that was always the question. But we don't have to deal with that now. And we can just, you know, we can, if we are better today than we were yesterday, we can celebrate that a little bit easier and a little bit, you know. And so I think that's part of enjoying it and having fun is I think that'll be our approach.
Rockets General Manager Rafael Stone joins us. He's from Las Vegas. We appreciate you taking the time. I do want to ask you quickly about your second pick of the draft, because I know in reading up before the draft, a lot of analytics models had Alperen Şengün, I think that's how you pronounce his last name, as the number one player in the analytics model in terms of his production and projection. Guys like John Hollinger, who's a highly respected analytics driven evaluator, said he couldn't see him busting, like it was very little chance. And everyone spoke very highly about a high floor and an exciting ceiling. Give us an idea of who he is as a player, and kind of what you think a reasonable 3-year projection is on him as an evaluator.
Oh, I have no idea what his projection is.
See, I just wanted to put you in there. I've got to do that for a living. I wanted you to.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you that one. But but who he is? He's a really interesting player. I mean, he's a guy who's very, you know, he was the MVP of the Turkish League at 18, and the team that won the Euro that won EuroLeague this year came out of the Turkish League. So that was the team that ended up being the best in the world outside of the NBA. And so it gives you a sense for the fact that these are really good basketball players. And he wasn't playing against, you know, other 18-year-olds. He was playing against, you know, 30-year-old men, and was frankly dominant. And so, you know, so that's really, really interesting. Now, it's not the NBA, and players are not as good in the Turkish League as they are in the NBA from top to bottom. But as a player, he just has a lot to his game. So he's very comfortable in the low post. Kind of think the old school, dump it into him, center. And one on one in the post, he's a load. He's got a lot of moves. And he can get himself comfortably into shots. He's very hard to play without fouling. But besides that, he handles the ball pretty well. He's got really good touch from the perimeter. Just because he was so effective down low, he just didn't shoot much. But I do think that's an area that eventually he'll be pretty good at. I think he's going to stretch the floor all the 3-point line. And he can really pass. And he has moves. He has moves not just in the low post, But even from the perimeter, he's got a little crossover, and he's got hesitations. He's got, like, fake handoff spins. He's just got a lot of moves for a guy who's big and physical, and he's truly, truly physical. And so, you know, he's really interesting, and he's actually a lob threat. He doesn't jump tremendously high, but he's got really, really good timing or something, because he dunks a lot, and he dunks from odd positions, and that matters because your ability to finish is, you know, if you have to shoot layups all the time, it's much harder to finish than if you're dunking. It's just, yeah, I can walk you through it, but just trust me. So in the Turkish League, that was one of the things that we noted, was he's not somebody who, you know, who's really limited the way you might initially think he is. And so we think he's really interesting, and he's been really, really good in summer league. You know, as good as we would have hoped. But you know, he's gonna have to translate it to preseason, and, you know, eventually the regular season and everything else. And you know, he's gonna have to, you know, he's gonna see things he hasn't seen before. I will say, you know, my sense is he adjusts to new things very quickly. So I'm optimistic, but, you know, we'll just see where it goes. You know, and in that respect, we're in exactly the same position with Garuba and with Josh Christopher and with Jalen Green. I mean, these guys are also young. We're just going to have to see how it goes. We're really excited, but yeah, we'll just have to see how they take on each and every challenge.
Yeah, I think it is an interesting, you know, in looking at the four players you drafted, two appear to be offensive forward and two appear to have some defense. I mean, it looks like, is that wrong that you drafted with some idea of balance between offense and defense when you drafted with those four picks in the first?
Yeah, that actually would not be right.
Okay.
But
two-way players,
no,
Lance.
I know they're two-way players.
Two-way
I'm just saying they appear to be pretty good defenders at three
and
four.
I do think that the strengths of the players are maybe different, and the things that they already do well might be different. I would agree with that. I would say we do think that all four will be two-way players. I think if it's really hard to succeed in the NBA if you're not at least average on both sides of the ball. And the best players, you don't necessarily have to be a great defender and a great offensive player, but you need to be kind of average at one and then great at the other. And if you're able to do that, then you can be a really, really impactful player. But if you're a great defender and really subpar offensively, you generally give everything back. And the same thing if you're a great offensive player and subpar defensively.
How weird is
that? Yeah, teams will try and hide you, but it's really, really hard, especially in the playoffs.
I mean, speak honestly here. You've been with the Rockets for a while now. How weird was this to have draft picks? Like, you've been right there in the room talking basketball with Daryl Morey and the entire crew that's been there with the Rockets. And it's like, as a Rocket fan for my entire life, to see a Rockets team, the Daryl Morey run was like, oh my gosh, you just know draft day, it's not really going to be that impactful. And then for Rockets fans this year, to be looking at three first-round picks and then you come out of it with four players in the first round, like, that was really something we just aren't used to seeing.
Yeah, it's something I'm not used to doing. So I think it was a little different. You know, but I do think it was the right thing for the organization at this point in time. I do think, you know, we made a really, really good run at it, and I would do it again. But I think the time, you know, at the time and it's time and opportunity. I think we did. We picked up a fourth pick. It wasn't like we were just looking for a random young guy. It was just we were very, very high in Alperin, and that was the way we were able to get him. And so, so now we got him, and that means we have four young guys instead of three. And there were scenarios where we could have only ended up with two. So some of it is just opportunity, but I do think that this is the right time for kind of a talent infusion and to really look at building it back up so that we can, you know, we can be back in the hunt, you know, year after year after year to win a championship. But, I mean, ultimately, that's the only goal, is to win a championship, and it felt like this was the right path.
That's Rafael Stone, the Rockets general manager, after an exciting first draft, and certainly exciting to see the young players playing so well right out of the gate in summer league. And we certainly appreciate you taking the time to join us here for our first visit with you. Good luck in the upcoming season, and we're looking forward to visiting with you here in the future as well as we continue to watch this rebuild process with the Rockets. I, for one, am very excited about what it's going to look like. It was a great run, but I'm really excited to see what the new Rockets look like, and certainly want to congratulate you on what looks like a good first step. So thanks so much for joining us today, and good luck when the season starts.
Thanks. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
All right. It's Rafael Stone, the Rockets general manager. Good catching up with him, and really glad he took the time to join us. If you have friends who didn't get a chance to listen, make sure and check it out on the podcast. We'll have Trey separate that interview, and we'll put it up there individually for you. I just want to let you know that, Trey, that's what you're going to do.
Thank you.
Trey, okay. You, as you know, as a producer, just filter that down the cam so Cam can do it. That's how it works. Yeah.
No.
However it works.
No. Cam, you hear me. Cam knows. Cam's aware.
Cam's the attorney. He knows what to do. I guess we break it right now, right?
We're done.
Powered right through the...
We're done. Just say goodbye to everybody. Yeah. Okay. Just wrap it up.
All right. Tomorrow, we'll be back with more of the same, but an even better version of the show tomorrow. We have some very special stuff planned for you tomorrow. I think you're going to be really excited, Trey and listeners. I think you're really going to be excited. For Dell, for Trey, I'm Lance Zierlein. Tomorrow, John will be gone, but Dell joins me again, and we'll kick it off again.
For the final time.
For the final time, yeah. Dell ends up leaving us, but I'll see him every day, so it won't really matter.
Rest in peace.
Well, no, I'll still work here. I just won't be working on this show.
Yeah, he's going to the Gypsy Show, is what they're calling it.
Don't stop saying
all
that.
All right, I'm sorry.
You're going to get canceled.
I know.
The Travelers, that's what we call it.
The Travelers Show.
It's not the Killer Bees anymore.
It's the Travelers Show, is what we're calling it. For Dell, for Trey, thanks so much for joining us today. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Coming up next, Charlie Polillo.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. Administration of employee benefits is a hassle. Let HRNP eliminate those burdens and save you money. Visit HRP.net today.